Hi, and welcome to the Send Mum Club podcast. I'm your host, Gemma. Welcome along. Hi to you if you are a regular listener, and hi to you if you're a first-time listener. This is a parenting podcast with a difference, because obviously it is all about children with Send. And actually, I heard a really interesting stat on the radio the other week, which I'd love to say I've remembered, but I don't remember anything at the minute because I am so busy, so I've written it down so I don't get it wrong. And they were saying on the news that there are 1.7 million children with Send in England's schools. And the most common thing that those children are needing help with is speech and language, which I guess makes sense why there's such a long waiting list for it. My Leo has recently got his speech and language referral accepted, and we are now part of that waiting list. Where we are in the Northwest, it's about a year, but I know in other places it is significantly more than that. But I actually didn't realise that it would be that amount of children. 1.7 million children with Send in our schools is mind-blowing, really. So I guess having these chats with these amazing women on this podcast is even more important when you're hearing figures like that. So this week's guest, I'm really excited about. She slid into my DMs. Our Insta, by the way, if you aren't following, is at the Send Mum Club. I would love to hear from you. I'd love feedback. I'd love to know if you've got any guest suggestions, if you would like to be a guest, or any topics that you would like to hear more of. Like, please get in touch. I really do enjoy hearing from you. So that's how I got chatting to Charlotte. And I had a lovely conversation with Charlotte about her son, Barnaby, who has a form of epilepsy amongst a couple of other diagnoses, which Charlotte talks about more in this episode. She gives some great advice. There's some brilliant little tidbits for you. She talks about videoing Barnaby's seizures as evidence to show to the doctors, and so that she has a record of everything that happened. She also talks about keeping a journal, and by that I mean a journal of appointments and phone conversations and who you spoke to and what they said, which is such good advice. We talk about what life looks like day to day with a child with epilepsy, and unfortunately Barnaby has a significant amount of seizures every day, and how that means that life looks very different to what Charlotte thought that it would do. We also talk about the fact that Barnaby is hopefully scheduled for upcoming surgery, and the thoughts and feelings around that, and how you cope with that weight, and also the weight of results from genetic testing as well. I really hope that you'll like this episode. I know I really enjoyed our chat, so let's get into it. Charlotte, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And I would also like to say thank you for being so early, because we're recording in the evening and I actually need to tan. And there was a tiny part of me, right, that thought, can I get away with coming on like this Zoom call with you covered in tan? That, I'll be honest, makes me look like a slightly different race. And I was like, do you know what? Best not to. So it gives me more tanning time later. So absolutely, thank you so much.
No worries.
Now, Charlotte, this chat's come about because you slid into my DMs, which I'm always telling people to do because I love it. It's really nice to get some feedback on the podcast and kind of connect with other mums in that way. So yeah, if you're listening and you're thinking, oh, she doesn't really mean that. No, I do. I'd love to hear from you.
And do it.
The Insta, if you're not following it already, is at the Send Mum Club. But Charlotte, you are here to talk about your son, Barnaby, who is two, isn't he?
Yeah.
So just tell me a little bit about him. Like, what does he like? What kind of little boy is he? What is he into?
He is into everything. As in, he is a toddler and he will run to your heart's content. He will explore everywhere. If you let him go, he's gone. But he loves jumping and he loves cars, and honestly he has no fear and he's the happiest little boy ever.
Oh, that's so nice. Is he your only child?
Yes, after a long wait we finally got a surprise of Barnaby, and yes, he's our only child, and now we're like, we're too busy, we could never do this again. Because he literally fills our time completely.
It always makes me laugh, right? Taking away kind of any additional need or diagnosis, it makes me laugh so much when people who haven't had any children go, I want six. And I'm like, well, have one. Have one and see how you get on.
Yeah, even the people that like in my family have had like two under two. I'm like, oh my God, how are you doing this? It's absolutely crazy.
No, idea of that terrifies me. So between my older two, there's 5 years between my older two. And then 10 years between Millie and Leo. And that was all with the very much planned like that.
I don't know how people do it. Fair play to them. But it was just, it would be carnage and chaos 24/7.
No, I completely agree with you. So you messaged, as I've said, about Barnaby. Do you just want to say a little bit about the context of that message?
Yeah, Barnaby was diagnosed at 8 weeks old with a very rare form of epilepsy. It's called infantile spasms. Not many people have actually heard about it. We certainly had no idea. And then since then, obviously, you collect loads of diagnoses on the back of one. It's like a Christmas tree. You just collect one every time you go. But his situation is still very rare, so we still don't actually have a reason as to what's caused it. And he's been tested out of 60,000 genetic conditions, and we still haven't found the reason as to why. But he's still very much living with difficult and uncontrollable severe epilepsy. So not many people have that sort of life, so I thought that it would be a good thing because it's a different side of additional needs and things like that. So yeah.
What does a typical day look like for you in terms of these infantile spasms?
So Barnaby still has up to 70 seizures a day. So throughout the night, throughout the morning, and they all change in severity. They're not your typical seizures. They're called a tonic drop seizures and spasms that he will have, along with absent seizures. So not your typical shaking and jerking, which you would suspect that a seizure would look like. Mm-hmm. So if he's like walking anywhere, he will just drop to the floor, no warning, like a clap of thunder. So you can imagine with a toddler, it's a challenge because he wants to be that freedom and he wants to have that. But obviously, there's just, it's so unexpected as to when he can go. We've had a lot of severe injuries in the past as well. So it's just keeping him as safe as possible, really. So he's still on 4 medications morning and night. So having to like, I know everyone makes a joke having to pin down to like brush someone's teeth and brush a toddler's teeth and things, but he's having to have those 4 meds, pinning down to take them and then have to get them again in the evening. And each one is like an adult medication. So they're called anti-epilepsy drugs. So they are for us, an adult. So they come with a lot of side effects and a lot of things. But because he was so young when he first received his diagnosis, we're not sure what's the meds, what's this, what's, because he's been on them for so long, really, it's hard to know what he would be like without them, sort of thing. He wears a helmet if he goes anywhere, but also it's just brought out different development delays. It's brought out different diagnoses in terms of he's got drug resistant epilepsy, he's been found to have a couple of malformations in his brain. So what that means essentially is that his brain's just not developed properly in the womb. And he, in terms of like, it's like lesions in his brain in different areas. So he's got a right-sided weakness. He struggles to walk a bit. So next week we're actually getting a walking frame for him. And they say it's a bit like an umbrella term is cerebral palsy, but it's quite difficult because it's not cerebral palsy. But I think a lot of people know what cerebral palsy is, and we get a lot of like comparisons in that way, but Barnaby doesn't have that. he doesn't speak at all, and it has affected his whole development. He used to be able to say different words, and we've obviously lost them in the last year. He struggles with short-term memory loss, so we always laugh and make a joke that he's like our little Dory, because that's his favourite film ever. But he's got short-term memory loss, so Barnaby 1 week could be completely different from the next. Some things that he's learned today he'll forget, so it's quite a challenge at the moment.
How are you coping with all of that? Because that's a lot, you know. What you've just said is a lot.
Yes, it is a lot. I have had great help. I've got an amazing husband who we've had to like adjust work so that we're looking after him relatively 50-50, and we've just had to rely on each other so much, and I think that's been a great support. But then obviously your wider family become a huge support. No one should have to see their child in those situations, and we have had a lot of terrifying seizures that will stay with us, and how terrified we've been. So sort of in the last 5.5 weeks, for example, Barnaby attends nursery on a Tuesday morning and a Thursday daytime. He's actually not been for a full day in 5.5 weeks due to his epilepsy. They've either had to call an ambulance or call us to come and collect him. So there's really been not much respite at all. But you just have to keep going for him, because I think we've worked out just to live in that day. I can't look, as you said previously, you can't look too far into the future because it's too painful. I don't know what his future looks like, but I do know that he's happy, he's content. Yes, we may have bad seizure days, but if I'm out and about doing things with him, I think I feel that I don't, that he's managing, if that makes sense. So I feel like he's, if I take him to the theme park, which we've got season tickets to, or to the farm, or if I'm going out and doing stuff, I feel like I'm giving him the childhood still, even if he doesn't know anything of what we're doing. I feel like I know that he is, and he loves other children so much. So I just wanted as much exposure, really, and I think he is how we've all coped and managed, because, you know, you can sit in the bad seizures, and sometimes I do get completely terrified if they've happened really badly in the middle of an aisle in the shop. Basically, it does turn a few heads, and a few people come up to you and things like that. So you just have to just try and remain calm. And he always looks so terrified after his seizures. So you just know that you don't want that. But I'd never want him to feel afraid either, if that makes sense.
Did it take you a while to feel confident going out? I suppose I'm asking that question in two ways. Firstly, in terms of him being safe, but also in terms of other people's reactions to that, because I don't know if you've listened to Shona's episode. That was one of her things, it took her a really long time to feel like she could go out because she was worried about what other people would think, or are they looking? And yeah. How have you found that?
So in the beginning, he was so tiny, and we stayed in hospital for a long time. So it kind of burst our newborn bubble instantly. And then at the beginning, we had to give this med every 2 hours, this one. So it kind of threw us into that routine instantly, you know, taking meds with us, doing this. But we had holidays booked that I was going to have a lovely, like, newborn baby. And I think it made us have a focus onto the next thing. And I think Barnaby has now had these high amount of seizures since 2023 in October. Like, every day has just been 70 to 100 seizures every day. I think when I'm at home, I find him more difficult to deal with because I can't just pop to the toilet. I can't just, you know, it sounds really bad, but I can't do these things. And certainly as he's grown up to be a toddler, I can see that he wants that freedom, and I can see that he wants to go off and do these amazing things. And so sometimes I do get it wrong. Sometimes I'll let him have that freedom. Oh, he's not had a seizure in an hour. I'll let him walk with me holding hands, and or I'll let him go and just walk there. And it bites me in the bum. Literally, he'll have a seizure. It's a really bad injury, whatever. But it's really hard. And certainly, like, in our back garden, for example, we've got patio. And before, you would just think, oh, yeah, it's a lovely patio. But I literally just can see complete danger everywhere. So in terms of those sort of things, it is really hard to sort of let that rain go a little bit, but then you're always letting it go, and then he pulls you back to don't let it go too far. So yeah. I do find parenting out and about a lot easier, which is why we're always busy. And it's probably not a good thing that we're always out and about and busy, but for me, I think that's how I cope, because I know that if we go to a field, for example, he can run off and he can have that freedom because grass is softer or the sand is softer, those sort of things. So I think that's humbled us very quickly in terms of learning new ways about it. And he learned to walk June last year, and he still walks like he has just learned to walk. So he has no spatial awareness whatsoever. So a large open space, it's lovely. But certainly in like soft plays, things like that, I find it very difficult because all I can see is he's going to slip on that. He's going to fall and crack his head there. He's going to do this and do that. And especially like going around to friends' houses, you've never looked at danger like it. It's crazy. You're just like, oh my God, this house is just not proofed enough for what we need it. Whereas in our home, you got padded mats. It's literally like I live in a soft play.
So how have you found other people's reactions? And by other people, I mean strangers. So you've mentioned like seizures, being out and about or in the aisle of a supermarket. How do people react? Are people helpful? Like what? I don't, it would be difficult to know how you would react if you saw that happening, because I think my natural instinct would be to want to help, but then are you imposing yourself on someone who just needs some space? Like what would you say to somebody who sees something like that happening with somebody with their child?
To be honest, Barnaby's seizures are so subtle. So at first, you would not even have been able to tell he was having one. Like we would, but you'd get people come up to, oh, he's so lovely, oh, hello, and chatting away to him, and he's like in a cluster of a seizure, and you know, people were still trying to chat to him, like, oh, what a lovely little man, hiya, can you wave? And they're touching him, and we do get that a lot. And even now, he has got, in his absence seizures and his clusters, he's got a little tell where he'll put the tongue on the roof of his mouth, and that's how we know that he's out of it, and his eyes aren't fixing on anyone. It's only been in the last sort of 6 weeks that his seizures have changed to become noticeable, that, oh, someone random would probably be able to see, like, oh, what sort of thing is going on. So with his infantile spasms, certainly they're very convulsive, but again, they're not your typical seizure. So they don't last very long in terms of that one, but they can last up to 10 minutes of repetitive of those. So he'll have a break, he'll have another, he'll have a break. So yeah, people, when he's like dropped to the floor, I'd say maybe at a push, but no one's ever really said anything until, you know, we definitely got those looks last time. I think just purely because they don't see it. And especially with infantile spasms, when he was first diagnosed, I started noticing these weird eye movements, newborn eye movements, and like weird things when he started waking up, and it'd be like a little jerk, and I was like, oh, that's really weird. And then it progressed slightly, and I remember on Mother's Day, I was chatting to my mum and my sister, and I was like, he keeps doing these really weird eye movements. Is that me or is that my anxiety? Like, what's going on? And then they were like, yeah, newborns just do weird stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah. And then it got a bit worse, and then it got a bit more noticeable. So then Kieran, my husband, started to be able to notice that every time he was waking up from a sleep, something would happen. Again, it was literally lasting like 2 to 4 seconds. So it was so quick. And then in the space of a week, it went from weird eye movements to then he had 9 in a row crying. And it was very obvious that something was very wrong. But again, I didn't tell anyone. We just literally were like, let's just take him to hospital. Because if we get told that we're stupid and we're newborn parents, then, you know, we don't have to deal with that embarrassment of being told. So we didn't tell anyone. And then we just didn't leave hospital that for 12 days. We just stayed. Oh, wow. We just got the diagnosis. And then from there, all these tests. And I mean, one thing that will always stay with Kieran and I is that, you know, watching your tiny baby get hooked up to oxygen and practically getting kicked out of the room while everyone else floods in is the worst thing you probably could ever see. But it's definitely had new challenges now, and the challenges change all the time because your child develops and they grow older, and yeah, their needs just change, don't they?
Mentioned that you've got like a really supportive family around you. Are they actually able to babysit? Are you able to leave him with other people? Because obviously you've mentioned the word respite a couple of times, but I mean, if you and your husband are kind of working around Barnaby in a different way to what other parents would be,
yeah,
are you able to kind of have a break?
Honestly, no, but my family that would be listening would probably kick me. But it's different. They do offer, and we do occasionally have that, but I wouldn't say it would be for long. It would be like 2 hours while we go for dinner, or 4 hours while we do that. It's definitely not as much as what a normal... So, for example, I have 2 nieces. So, for example, their babysitting, it's a lot like, yeah, my mum will look after them a lot easier than what they would for Barnaby. And I think as well with Barnaby, it becomes not just the safety of watching him, but he's got emergency medication to give if he has, you know, a cluster of 10 minutes. He comes with giving the right doses of medications, and I can literally draw up all the meds prior, but sometimes things get dropped or something will leak out, he's not had the right amount, or just something that would happen. So no, as not as much as, you know, we would like it to be. The respite is nursery, and it took 7, because we live very rural, it did take us 7 nurseries to find one that accepted Barnaby on the 8th try. So no one would really take him locally because they couldn't support his needs. But now we found that, we do get our Tuesday mornings and our Thursdays of that respite, really, which is enough to sort of like top it in. But obviously, he hasn't attended a full day in a long time. So yeah, it's a challenge. It's a challenge.
So I guess that makes it, though, like you're kind of saying you've got this respite with nursery, but on those Thursdays when he's meant to be there for the full day, I guess you're just waiting for the phone call, aren't you?
Yeah, I could not go far because I am just literally waiting for the phone call. Again, obviously, he's a toddler, But on top of that, he does have epilepsy. So the injury phone calls, or just to let you know, he's had a seizure, he's bumped his head. You know, I get about 3 accident reports every week. So we just collect them. So, yeah, they are so good and so helpful. And I know that they really do try and keep him there for as long as possible. But sometimes it's not. So I don't ever plan anything for a Tuesday or a Thursday, because I know that probably we'll be collecting him from somewhere.
So you mentioned at the beginning of this chat about further tests that have been done, and you don't yet know why this happens.
Yes.
So do the doctors think that it is because of something that they haven't yet found, or could it just be one of those things?
So with infantile spasms, only a 10% of children don't ever find a cause. So it's a very low number that just swim on through with not finding anything. But because it's one of those epilepsy types that is definitely caused by something, Barnaby does have these brain malformations, and technically they're like 2 lesions in his brain. His brain's just not formed properly. However, they do believe he's got an underlying genetic cause on top of that as well, or like a mutation that the test hasn't been done yet, or you know there's only so every year it changes on the genetic testing, so we're still very early on in our journey, and they will retest him every year and us every year until they do find something. But even your rarest ones, like, it's so limited on information. We've been told the worst things, unfortunately, that when you get a heavy diagnosis, they like trauma bomb you. I feel like they have to tell you the worst things possible. So, you know, 8-week-old Barnaby just got his diagnosis, and we were getting told that he could have like a genetic condition where he doesn't live past the age of 5. He could have a metabolic cause that just gets worse. He could have a degenerative condition where it just gets worse with time. We just have no idea. So that's definitely been the hardest thing. And one thing, when you don't know a cause and it does come into genetics, I think it's just a mother thing, but you literally always just blame yourself. Like, what did I do in pregnancy? I had COVID, I had the COVID vaccine, you know, like, you just, your head just gets blurred with, I must have done something to make my baby's brain not develop properly. And it's just, yeah, it's an intense thing. And I don't think that ever really leaves, the guilt that you have. Like, it just is always going to be there for me, which is sad, but I hope that one day I probably can overcome that.
Yeah, I think the first thing I'd like to say there is that you're wrong.
100%, I know.
It's very easy for me to say that, but I think what you're feeling is extremely valid, and I think a lot of people listening will hugely resonate with that. I've had those feelings about Leo before and his diagnosis. Well, it's my fault. And that was actually the very first thing I thought once I kind of came back into the world again after hearing that news. That was my that's the first place my head went to. I was like, well, it's my fault then.
Yeah.
And it's not, it wasn't my fault, and it's not your fault, but it doesn't mean that it's easy to let go of those feelings, does it?
No, absolutely not. And it's so stupid. I mean, everyone that you tell as well, like, those feelings are so valid, but everyone that you tell is like, well, don't be ridiculous. And I'm like, this is where my head has gone.
Yeah.
Like, I can't control genetics. Like, I can't control that. We're fit and healthy, my husband's fit and healthy, like, there's nothing like Barnaby in our family, so it's not our fault. But no. You just are like, oh my god, what have I done? And I think that where his condition is still so unknown. We're still learning so much about it. We just don't know. And this is going to sound absolutely ridiculous, but I requested all my birth notes. I requested everything. I've literally gone through his whole medical report looking for something that's been missed or looking for something that's not been done. And I do think that, you know, people say don't Google, don't also request all of their medical records, because it's intense. And unless I'm that sort of person that wants to know everything, because I hate being blindsided. Like, Barnaby in his first year responded really well to medication, so he was developing normal for a normal baby. He, in terms of like sitting unaided, he was quite delayed and didn't do that until he was 10 months, but he was like my perfect boy, and he still is now obviously my perfect boy, but I just, my glasses got a bit fogged, and then we completely got wiped out when his seizures returned, and they've never left. So I like to know everything about a situation. So I've done like epilepsy courses online, and I've done like, I'm currently doing sending disability level 2s and things like that. I just want to know everything possible, which is either a blessing or a curse, I'm not sure.
If you're going down that route, then knowledge is power, isn't it? Yes, there's obviously a flip side to that.
Yeah.
But there's pros and cons to both ways, because I totally get why some people are like, don't want to know. I'm just going to do it my way. And this is our life and we'll crack on. And I also completely understand the way that you're doing it as well.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people that you've spoken to have had, like, some of them have had really good hospital experiences and things. And, you know, that's really good. And when we were in hospital, when we first got diagnosed, they could not have done more for us, and more tests for Barnaby. He had so many tests that first, like, 12 days. It was crazy. But then it was kind of like, well, his seizures are now controlled. Let's just wait and see how his development goes. And then when the seizures returned and the development went skew-whiff, unfortunately, we've had to like claw a lot of it back. So knowing that knowledge has made me so much of a better advocate for Barnaby, because I know what I'm talking about. And it's literally like people say, you become a specialist overnight. It is crazy. Like the term, neurology terms that I've had to learn and things like that. And Barnaby, one thing that is a challenge for us is Barnaby's so variable. So depending on seizures, if you have an appointment with Barnaby at 9 o'clock in the morning, he's absolutely so happy. He's walking perfectly. His hemiparesis isn't really there. Barnaby at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it's a completely different boy where he can't even walk. So, you know, we're seeing these different people for like 20 minutes at a time. They're not seeing his every day. So that's been the hardest thing. You've really had to, like, you know, being told that, no, he's just left-handed for a long time, when actually that's not true and that should never be a thing, until they're much older. There is a problem there, and you do have to sit on it and like completely like, well, actually, you said this and this person said that. And yeah, so it's been difficult, definitely, since leaving the hospital, to try and advocate in a way that gets people to listen a lot more. And obviously, you're dealing with so many different specialists, consultants and things. It is just, you can get lost in it, can't you?
Oh, God, 100%. I mean, we had an appointment for Leo. To be fair, it's a routine one. It's nothing major. He's got to have a minor surgery. And we had to see a new surgeon that we hadn't met before. And he said, oh, so he had this thing, didn't he, on his notes? Tell me about that. And I was like, I actually don't know what you mean. Like, I don't understand the words you've just said. And then you go, oh God, okay, well, sorry, now you've explained it in a way I understand. Okay, well, that was actually like a year and a half ago now. So let me just rewind through all of the other stuff to go back to try and put yourself back there and remember how it happened. It's a lot, isn't it? Especially in your case with it does sound like things are changing constantly. To kind of keep a grip on how things have happened and when must be really difficult.
Yes, definitely. And it is definitely, I video everything. The one thing they give you with advice of infantile spasms is if you're not sure, to video them. So we were actually going to be turned away from the hospital when we first went in, because when we got there, it was a 50-minute journey. When we got there, he was absolutely fine. He was a normal, happy baby. He was doing, it didn't make any weird movements because he was awake. But when I showed the videos of what had happened that morning, they were like, oh, that's weird. And then they kept us in from there. So, and now, like, I video every seizure, which, not every seizure, because obviously I don't catch it, but anything that I can try and, like, get it out, whilst also caring for Barnaby. There's not a lot that I can do in those seizures. It's not like, you know, I have to do anything in there. He's normally safe. As long as he's safe, I'll try and video it if it's lasting a bit longer than it should. But I then send them to the neurology. So in terms of that, it's quite helpful because then they know, right, we've got rid of these seizures with this medication, but actually these seizures are coming in. I video his walking. So like I said, at 9 o'clock, different baby, 2 o'clock, different baby. I video those things. So I keep, that's how I think I keep a record of showing what Barnaby's actually like. And I think that that is quite a good thing for people to do, especially if they're getting shrugged off. But I think you know your child the best. So definitely in terms of that, it's what you should be doing is having evidence basically to support your claim.
Well, yeah, because you're like building up a whole file then, aren't you? And I suppose rather than then kind of what we've just talked about, then rather than someone saying, so what happened a year ago? What did it look like 6 months ago or however, you can go, well, this.
Yeah.
You don't have to try and remember or, you
exactly.
know.
Exactly. And Barnaby seizures, they change so frequently with weather, obviously in the heat it's so much worse. If something's weird, you're like, oh, that's weird, he's never done that before, you know, then you can get help from it. Because if he never does it ever again, you're like, oh, well, you know, they'll schedule an EEG and then the EEG comes back clear and things like that. So it's just like, oh, it's just easier to just definitely have it there, show them this is what you mean. So yeah, definitely in our history it's definitely been beneficial to record everything.
How are you kind of coping with the not knowing? I briefly had this chat with my previous guest, Steph, so you won't have heard this yet because when we're recording this now, her episode hasn't gone out, but she has a little boy, Archie, who has an extremely rare genetic condition. And it took them 9 months, I think, to get the results back. So I'd spoken to her in terms of, oh, in the past, you felt like this, but now you know, but you're in that now, aren't you? How are you coping with that, with the not knowing?
It did used to really affect me, not knowing what was wrong with him. And the hospital finally agreed to give us his MRI in September last year. So we knew from the January something was a bit off. We knew he wasn't using his left hand. We knew those sort of things, and we were like, "Now, there's got to be something going on, like in his brain that they're not finding." So I do think you sort of take control that way. It really made me unnervous. It still makes me a bit nervous around the fact that if I'm waiting for results, I can't think about anything else.
Yeah.
The genetics, I've got all those results back. They've come back inconclusive. I know that they're not testing, so I know that I don't have anything outstanding. So, you know, I've got his MRI results back. I've got EEG results back. I now know what they know, sort of thing. But having that over your head when there's like an open test or you're waiting results, I literally live and breathe that. You know, I'm checking the NHS app constantly. It's probably very unhealthy, but that's just how I cope. I'm just waiting to see if something's been uploaded. I'm just waiting to see if, you know, I'm calling them to chase them, calling them to chase that, and things like that. I think that I keep myself very busy because it's easier to not sit with it for a very long time, which is why I take on courses and why I go out every day and things like that.
I don't think, though, that anyone would be able to not be consumed by it while you're actively waiting for a result. You know, you're waiting for that phone call, or you're waiting for the email, or, you know, the text to say that the result's in, or, you know, I think we'd be hard pushed to find somebody who wasn't up the wall while they're waiting for that message.
Even if someone went in for like a biopsy, you know, it's like that, but it is so consuming. And currently, there is nothing outstanding for Barnaby.
So what are the next steps then in terms of trying to get this final, I suppose, piece of the puzzle?
Barnaby's just been moved on to a clinical trial. So because they've just lowered the benchmark in our hospital locally for a drug trial of CBD, effectively.
Okay.
He's the youngest child under that, because obviously he literally just turned 2 in January and he was put on that. So he's on that trial. It has helped, but we know because of his lesions in his brain and his malformations that nothing will help his epilepsy. So Barnaby's next steps will be they're going to meet with a surgery panel. So that will be done at Bristol Hospital. There's only actually 4 hospitals in the UK that do epilepsy surgery. So there's Great Ormond Street, there's Alderhay, there's Bristol Hospital, and I want to say like another one. Southern, unreal. But like one up north, I'm sorry people up north. But
4.
I'm so southern. Yes, so there's only 4, and that is humongous wait list. I'm talking like 250 children a year need epilepsy surgery, and only 139 get the surgery. So the younger that they are, so under 4 is the best time to do it, because their brains aren't fully developed and formed yet, and they're able to they'd still be able to learn after they've had that life-altering surgery. So the next steps is that our neurology team will meet with the Bristol team, and they will discuss Barnaby as a whole, get some further tests done, and then he's looking at having 2 different surgeries next year, sort of thing. But again, unfortunately, they're not curative, so there is no cure for what Barnaby's got until we know specifically what it is that we're actually tackling. So these surgeries are just going to be limiting seizures. It's not going to be getting rid of seizures. So yes, that's his next year. That's why, again, you have to live just every day, because I can't even plan next month, let alone thinking about where we're going to be next year if we do have surgery or things like that. So that's next year me problem.
That's obviously a big surgery, isn't it, to think about?
Yes.
Like I've got friends who have children with Down syndrome, and quite a high proportion of children born with Down syndrome have to have open heart surgery, and it's on the same level, isn't it? It's not something that you can go, oh, it's routine, oh, it's fine. Like ultimately it's big and it's scary, isn't it? And it's not nice to think about.
Yeah, and a lot of the surgery offers that are there for epilepsy, yes, they do have really good outcomes, but for epilepsy surgery, that, you know, one of Barnaby's thing is they will be splitting his brain in 2 to effectively have 2, so that the seizures don't spread as much. So it is the same. It's not your regular appendix surgery or a surgery, you know, where you've got really good outcomes with. And each child is so different. So you could meet four children and they've each had the exact same epilepsy surgery and no two are the same. And I think that it's in itself is crazy because you just have no idea. Are they going to learn? Are they going to forget everything that they've learned? Are they, you know, do we have to get worse before we can get better? I think those sort of things is a really big, it's a really big deal. But the list for them is just crazy. The amount of children, bless them, that are waiting.
I think I would probably have to do the same thing as you, is just not think about it.
Yes.
Until it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my friend, she's waiting for, her son is waiting for epilepsy surgery and he was due to have it this year, but now they're saying that there's still 50 on the list in front of him. So they're putting him down for a cancellation, but, you know, we don't know if it's going to be 2 months' time or 6 months' time. And all while you're waiting, their everyday life is just exhausting. I think Barnaby's one of the only child that still has like 2-3 naps a day at a 2.5 year old because he's so exhausted each one. And so, you know, and then it's a vicious cycle because his sleep is a trigger for the seizures. So every time he's more tired, he then has more seizures and it's just like constant chaos. So I think that more definitely should be done in terms of helping people with dramatic and severe epilepsy, basically, because they don't have a life at the moment of what they go through, no matter what age you are, really.
But then I guess it doesn't sound like you are able to have much of your own life either, because this it does sound like it's all consuming.
Yes.
How do you claw back any time for you? Do you have the opportunity to kind of do any self-care or how does that look for you when things get overwhelming? Because they're for everybody, you know, despite the severity of what's going on, it's all relative, isn't it, to your situation? But everybody has those days where you just go too much, can't anymore. How do you deal with those days, especially when, as we've discussed, you haven't really got the option for very much respite?
I cry a lot, which is a good thing. And I think you actually mentioned as well the car sessions. Like, I think it was you or someone else. But
no, it was. It was Ebony with the tapping and the breathing exercises.
Get in your car. And obviously, I drive to work and it's like an hour. So if Barnaby's not with me, like, that is my time just to sit in silence and not have a baby monitor at me, and I just get to, you know, listen to what I want to listen to and what I, you know, what podcasts I want to listen to. And I do cry a lot, and I think that's a good thing because
I agree
it's not a normal life at all, but then it's empowered me in ways that I have never dreamed of being empowered. So the empathy that I have for others, I, you know, it's made me more of a confident person to speak to random people and ask them if they need help. And, you know, I think it's definitely changed me for the better because I know the struggles that we go through. So I want to be, you know, if I could just lend a helping hand to a mum whose baby's screaming and she's putting her shopping away or something like that. In terms of things like that, it's made me appreciate everything so much more. And I probably come across as a psycho who's constantly asking people, oh, can I help you?
But that's so nice.
Yeah, I definitely think you need to. And it has changed me as a person. I used to be so anxious and so worried all the time. I don't have the time to be anxious. So in a way, it's helped me in that sense. And like I said, always just throwing myself in. I feel like me is epilepsy now, which is crazy. But it has been, you know, it probably is all I ever talk about to friends and family. But I'm consumed by epilepsy, so that is all I've got to offer. I can't offer much else. So, you know, I do go to like swimming, or I'll go to like choir, but it's very rarely that I'll do those things. So just, yeah, podcasts and just driving is the only time I get for me, really.
I guess there's always the worry in the back of your head, isn't there? You can't ever switch off from that. But if you aren't physically with him, then you don't need to worry in that immediate moment, do you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Apart from one thing that me and my husband always laugh at is we can't actually call each other anymore, like on the phone.
Oh, without, do you panic without, each other?
Yeah. What's happened?
Oh, God. So,
we can't, you know, we'll have to like give a text first before.
Yeah, see his name come up and go, oh, God, not you, no.
So that's one thing that we always laugh at. But yeah, it's literally just talking. I talk all the time to people who may not understand. No one understands what I'm going through, really. And apart from other epilepsy mums. But like your friends and family, I just talk at them. I don't expect them to give me anything back. Like the breezy question when you meet people like, oh, how's Barnaby? How's little man? They infuriate me because I'm like, how long have you got? Like, he's happy. That's all that matters. Because actually, no, he's not great. This morning before 8 o'clock, he's had like 12 seizures. But you're doing it as like a throwaway, really nice comment. So
yeah, they're not actually asking, are they?
No, exactly. You don't want to trauma bomb them, do you?
Do you find though that it kind of facilitates deeper conversations? Because that's something that I've really lent into now. Like, I actually can't be asked with small talk with people.
Absolutely.
So I'm like, I would rather like just have like a proper conversation about something that means something. Otherwise, can't really be bothered. And that's definitely come from Leo. Like, if someone says to me now, I mean, people probably avoid me because of this. If someone says to me, oh, are you all right? I'd be quite happy to go, actually, no, like, I'm feeling really overwhelmed with stuff at the minute. And I'm having a bit of a bad day. And this has come up, and where maybe they just did want to go, hi, and I've gone, so let me tell you how I am.
Exactly. And I do that all the time. I'm just like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And you know, I still get now like friends being like, Charlotte, I knew that Barnaby had this epilepsy, but I never imagined that. I never knew what that actually meant for your everyday life. So yeah. I do now, but I will be like, if someone asks how am I, I'm like and I just burst into tears. I'm like, oh God, you shouldn't have asked me. And it's like a random employee or something that's just passed me, like, hi Charlotte, how are you? And I'm like, I'm okay.
Do you know what I do think though, and what I've really found is that by doing that and by being vulnerable and opening up, it allows other people to do that with you. So by you being honest and going, actually, no, I'm not okay, the amount of people that will then be able to go to you, oh, actually, maybe not in that moment, but will go, oh, I can talk to her, rather than just having that surface level, oh, are you okay? Yeah, are you? Sound, bye. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think as well, like, we're a very talky about your feelings family. And, you know, my mum can't talk about Barnaby without getting into tears. Like, she cries all the time about the Barnaby situation. And I think that I definitely don't always need to be told how strong you are and you're going through such a lot. Sometimes it is crap, and just sit with that. Like, it's not what I imagined my life would ever look like. And sometimes you can just sit with that and you can just talk about that. And I think, like you said, it's made me have conversations that I never thought I would actually be having. And Barnaby certainly is the first child like this in my whole family. So
yeah, same with Leo.
So it's made them ask questions and be inquisitive, and it's, you know, it's a good thing sometimes because you want to show them actually this is our everyday, and it's not always roses and it's not always great, but you can just say that it's not. And I'm not expecting, you know, you're so strong, you're doing wonderfully. Like, no, sometimes I'm not.
Yeah.
But you can just say, as long as Barnaby's not affected or impacted, I will always talk to others before that, because I know that if I'm overwhelmed and consumed, I don't want him seeing that. And obviously I spend more time with him than anyone else. So as long as he's happy and having the best time, I don't really care what else goes on out of the world, if that makes sense.
So I always finish the podcast with the same two questions. And the first one is, what is the best piece of advice that you've been given along the way?
My mum, when we were first diagnosed, she bought me a notebook and she said, write everything down. So I've written every test, every phone call, every appointment. I've written it down in 2.5 years. And it's probably been the best thing ever. Because you have so many teams and they do not communicate. So actually, it's been really beneficial for me to be like, well, actually, on the 29th of June, you actually said this. And on this day, this person said that. And I think that's been the most helpful thing, because they honestly do not communicate at all to each other. So you do get these meetings every so often called a team around the child meeting, but again, it's called different things, so everyone gets together, but the chances of any consultants actually getting on that telephone call is very unlikely. So I always just write everything down, send them to who needs to send them to. But yeah, I've kept a journal for me, and so that at least I know that I've written every report, everything down in that way, which has been really beneficial for me and our family.
Yeah, I can see how helpful that would be. And actually, that must have been really helpful when you were doing your DLA application as well, because
absolutely,
I didn't have any of that. And then it's like, oh, name all the teams that he's under. And the last thing they said, and I was like, oh, God. Luckily, we'd kept all our hospital letters. But then it's going through all of that paperwork and sifting in what you know, yes, what you do need and what you don't need. But, you know, I've just got a stack of letters from Alder Hey. But the way that you've done it makes much more sense. And I actually might start doing that from now.
Yeah,
just
you
to
definitely should. It's really helpful. And sometimes even like, I'll just write, you were brilliant, or you were amazing, just in case, like, if someone would, if he were to ever look at it in the future or something. I went through that, and but yeah, that was the best thing I've written down. So like, I've always kept track of what people said and where we were on this day. And you do get bombarded with appointments, so definitely writing them down is the best thing ever. Yeah. Because otherwise,
well done, your mum.
She'll love that place.
And my last question is, what do you wish that you'd known when you got the initial diagnosis that you know now?
Just how resilient you can become. And obviously, Barnaby is so resilient. They always are. Medical complex children are always resilient. But actually, us as parents, like, we're resilient and we're as strong as what he is. So once you've got that, like, I never thought we'd be the team that we are now. Like, we come as a three, albeit my husband probably doesn't know everything that I know in and out of epilepsy and of Barnaby's care. But just, we are all so strong in terms of each other. So I think we pick each other up. And yeah, it's been crazily overwhelming how you never thought that you'd be in this situation, and you never thought you'd cope as well as you actually are coping now.
Everyone at some point on whatever journey they're on, but somebody who would be listening to this podcast, has probably had the thought of, I can't do this.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you do.
But then what are your choices?
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, just crack on.
Your choice. Yeah, exactly. You just have to, you have to do it. And yes, you can't cope, and there will be days where you cannot cope.
And that's fine.
You love your child as much as you do, like, yeah, you'd go through anything for them, you know, even if they weren't medically complex, you would do the same for them. So there's no there's no choice, there's no anything. So just be with them, really. And yeah, it's been great.
Charlotte, thank you so much. I've really, really enjoyed chatting to you. I'm delighted you, slid into my DMs. I would encourage other people to do the same at the Cinnamon Club on Instagram. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Oh, I wish that I had not pressed stop recording when I had, because just as I was saying goodbye to Charlotte from our call, her mum came in to have a little chat and she was so nice. So I didn't catch her name. I'm so sorry. So hi, Charlotte's mum. It was lovely to meet you. I really enjoyed chatting to Charlotte just then. I hope that there's some pieces of our conversation that you found helpful. I thought that the advice that she gave, well, firstly, the advice that her mum had given about keeping a record of everything in a journal. I really like that advice. And I think, like I said, I might actually start doing that. I think that would be really helpful to kind of keep track of everything. Because as Charlotte was telling me that, I was thinking, somebody said to me the other day, involved in Leo's care, oh, when did he last have an eye test? And I was like, oh God, it feels like it was ages ago, but was it? And then I'm trying to like trawl back through my diary to find the appointment, and then I couldn't find what it was saved under. And actually, if you had everything in one journal, it would make things like that much easier. And actually, I also thought that what Charlotte was saying about videoing everything, if that is appropriate to your situation, what good advice, and to save them somewhere so that you can say, well, this is how things have changed and how things have progressed. And like Charlotte said, so you've got that almost pack of evidence to back up what you're saying and to help you advocate for your child. So once again, thank you very much to Charlotte. And that is it for another week. As always, I'd love it if you'd rate, review, follow, subscribe, whatever it is on your podcast app. 5 stars only, please, and nice reviews. I really hope that you're enjoying this podcast as much as I'm enjoying doing it. And I will be back with another fabulous guest for you next week.